You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Rob Volpe.
Empathy is something that every human has. It is a trait that is inherent to our DNA, and we're one of the few species in the world that is able to have empathy. We think about empathy as a muscle, and our empathy muscle has atrophied collectively as a society and for many of us as individuals.
Rob is an astute observer of life and a master storyteller who brings empathy and compassion to the human experience. As CEO of insight strategy firm Ignite 360, he leads a team of insights, strategy, and creative professionals serving the world's leading brands across a range of industries. As a thought leader in the role of empathy in marketing and the workplace, he frequently talks on the topic, is cited in media, and writes about building and applying empathy. He's finishing his first book, Everyday Americans, which explores his own journey to empathetic understanding of Americans through his ethnographic work. Rob, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you, Nick. It's great to be here.
Well, I am excited for this conversation. Perhaps one of the biggest reasons is, as it came up several times there in your bio, what I like to think of is the E word of empathy. And it's now more important than ever. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, 100%. And I absolutely love that you used the phrase E word, because that I often use that to describe not only empathy, but the thing that people are afraid of when it comes to empathy, which is the other E word, emotion.
And it's one of those that we struggle with a little bit in terms of we understand its importance, but it's kind of a heavy lift in our society in a lot of different ways.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a huge divide and I don't want to call it a misunderstanding, but a lack of understanding between different people. And you can think about it politically. You can think about it from a demographic perspective. There's so many different ways. Even if people think about it in their own offices, sometimes you've got that lack of empathy happening across functions. You might have it across strata layers in your organizational chart. There's been a lack of empathy. I actually talk about it as an empathy crisis, which started actually in 2001. University of Michigan had produced a study. They did a meta-analysis of student life surveys from 70 some different universities from 1979 through 2009. And they found that in 2001, there was a 40% decline in people's ability to see the perspective of their classmates, of their peers. And when you think about, okay, that was in 2001, and that number did not move through the rest of those 8 years. And in a refresh of the study, it didn't change, even a few years ago. So when you think about that, somebody that graduated or was in college in 2001, almost 20 years ago, they're in the middle of their careers right now. And that's a lot of people. And that's a big, big empathy deficit that we're having, which I think is part of what's contributing to this empathy crisis.
Well, I'm now struck by these two new phrases that I hadn't heard about, but agree with 100% that we have an empathy crisis as a result of our empathy deficit. Now, I agree with that, and it kind of stops me. It stuns me to silence sometimes because I have trouble thinking about how we overcome something like that. And I don't know if that's an easy answer, so I'm happy to let you punt and move on to the next one. But how can I feel less hopeless if we have such an empathy deficit?
It's something that I think about quite a bit. Few different thoughts. One of the things that we've found through the course of our work and have identified and now actually incorporate into all of our work and coach it, offer workshops on it, are the five steps to empathy. And that came about because even, you know, 8 years or so ago, you kept hearing like, we need to have more empathy. We need to have more empathy. That sounds great, but nobody was telling you how to do it. And empathy is something that every human has. It is a trait that is inherent to our DNA. And we're one of the few species in the world that is able to have empathy. However, it's a muscle. It's kind of like the appendix, which used to serve a vital purpose, but then over time through disuse and generations, the appendix has become a, as far as we understand it, useless organ. So then, you know, when you lose it, it's not such a big deal. And empathy has, if we think about empathy as a muscle, and our empathy muscle has atrophied collectively as a society and for many of us as individuals. So we said, all right, well, how do you actually start to bring that back to life? How do you strengthen a muscle again? There's a workout that you need to go through, and there's specific steps or exercises that you need to do. And all of that thinking led to, well, what are the actual steps to get to the point of having empathy with somebody else? And so that's where the five steps came about.
So can you walk us through what those five steps are? Just kind of some of the quick hits?
Absolutely. So the first step, and I find this one to be the hardest for people, is to dismantle judgment. We are, and this is a lot of where our divide is coming from, is we're being judgmental. We are enjoying casting aspersion on other people. It's become almost a blood sport. If you think about not only behavior on social media, where you've got people trolling or just saying outlandish things that they would never say to somebody's face, that's casting aspersion, that's casting judgment on somebody else. It's dismissing the other person out of hand. Or you think about, you know, reality shows and the competitive reality shows that were just negative, and you know, you're always putting somebody down. So there's this constant aspersion that's happening. And we do it in the workplace as well. And it, we're not, because we're so focused in other parts and we're getting all these signals to cast aspersion, when we're faced with somebody that's different from us, and that can be a marketer's consumer. That can be the person using their product that they just don't understand, that they're so different from them. And it may be because they understand there's an income difference, an education difference, political affiliation or a stereotype of a political affiliation, they will start to cast aspersion. They'll use judgment. And so then when you're getting into hearing and listening to somebody in research, for example, that judgment is a brick wall. You're not able to see the person. You're not able to really hear what they're saying. So we have to learn how to dismantle our judgment and get over that, get beyond our biases and our stereotypes and our past experiences so that we can start to listen. So that's the first step. The second step is to actively listen. The second step is to ask good questions. So the second step is ask good questions. That's about asking open questions to explore rather than to ask a close-ended yes-no question. You want to really let somebody open up. One of the phrases we always use and we tell our clients when they're coming into the field with us, they want to jump in to a conversation and they don't know how to phrase the conversation. All you have to say to somebody is, tell me more about that. Tell me more about how you, you know, make a decision to buy a car or make a decision to buy cereal. Tell me more. That opens somebody up and it leaves it very open to whatever the person is going to tell you. So that's really critical. Ask good questions. Third step, actively listen. So you're using your ears, obviously, but you need to be listening with your other senses. What are you picking up visually? What are the nonverbal cues that you're seeing? If you're in some, if you're fortunate enough to go into a consumer's home and you're doing an in-home interview, what are the other things that you're seeing? What are the sights, the smells, the feel that you're getting? what's your intuition telling you? What's that sixth sense saying? So you've got to be using all of that listening to start to understand and build a connection to that consumer. The fourth step is integrate into understanding. Integrate into understanding, you know, you're going to hear things that conflict with your own worldview. And so you have to make space in your head to have that person's perspective live in there as well as your own. It does not mean, having empathy does not mean getting rid of your perspective and your worldview. It just means recognizing and making space that, hey, there's another way of thinking about things. And let me then use step five, solution imagination, stepping into the shoes of somebody else and taking on their perspective. And so if you can get through all of those steps, you will ultimately be achieving empathy.
Really like what you said in there about getting rid of your own point of view, because it does seem like that is a fear that we have, right, wrong. It's something that shows up for a lot of people. And kind of strengthens that divide that we have, but that's an interesting step to bake in there, to acknowledge that is a part of empathy.
Yeah, something happened, and I haven't pinpointed exactly when, but we've become very absolute, and it's my way or my way, it's right or it's wrong, it's black or white. And it's not allowing space then to say, hey, there may be another point of view. And what we've heard from people, and even in my own personal experiences, it's that recognition of, all right, I may feel this way, but that doesn't mean I can't acknowledge that somebody else feels a certain way or has a certain perspective or behavior. It doesn't mean, and then accepting and embracing the fact that it doesn't mean my way is wrong. I can still hold on to my worldview, but hey, there's another way of doing things. And let me try to understand that and dive into that a bit more. And if you can do that and go down that path, it will unlock so many amazing things that can transform your business. It can transform your personal life. It can transform the world.
Hey, On Brand listeners. We talk about a lot of brand building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories to building engaged superfans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... You get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written two books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with two A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show.
So on the topic of, you know, the little thing of transforming the world, I think that what you've talked about here in this first half of the show has been advice that we can take to heart and do better in this way and help address some of this empathy crisis. Now, for those hard-nosed listeners out there that might be thinking, but damn it, I show up every week to, I don't know why I'm making him sound like Dr. McCoy from Star Trek, but we're just going to go with it. Damn it, Jim. I tune in to hear about brand stuff. How's all this squishy empathy thing help me connect with my customers?
Which is a great question, and we hear that all the time. And I think the first thing I want to point out is empathy is not as squishy as you might think. So again, the E word of emotion that people are afraid of, there's actually two different types of empathy. There's cognitive empathy, which is perspective taking. It's a little bit more of, I see your point of view. And then there's affective empathy. And affective empathy is the emotional squishy place, if you would. What we found is not everybody can get down into that affective place, but they can actually achieve cognitive empathy. Even the most hard-nosed spacefaring doctor like Dr. McCoy, they can see somebody else's point of view. They can get to cognitive empathy, but they may not want to feel the feels. Although that might actually be a better Spock analogy than it is for Dr. McCoy, but it is what it is. So there's that first. And in business, what you're trying to do is understand your consumer or your colleagues even, and understand where they're coming from. Because if you're able to do that, that's how you're able to solve for their needs, meet the, collaborate if it's internal. You're able to work better. You're able to do better problem solving, more critical thinking, because you have more information. And there's a propensity to have data, which we talk about the data, quant data, if you want, is the what. And that's great. That's all up in the head, but you don't have the why. And the empathy is what gives you and connects you into the why. And by really understanding empathetically what's motivating your consumer or even a segment of your consumers, it will let you more authentically solve problems for them. So, I'm solving problems for people. How's that help me? You may actually see a lift in sales, or your new product may launch and have spectacular results because you've used empathy.
Well, and I think back to, it's almost the parallel to how we started the show talking about the E word, and we don't want anything to do with empathy. And I love that you pointed out the two different kinds, because most of us go straight to that affective type of empathy, and that's why it seems like it's something that can be much more challenging. But what you point out, though, is what we actually need to do is get over the other stereotype that we so often reach for, the seemingly much more accessible quantitative what data, and really round out the picture, because we're only getting a partial view if we don't have both the what and the why, right?
Correct. Absolutely. It's like knowing that 4 out of 5 dentists prefer Trident, but not understanding why. And if you go into it thinking, oh, they prefer it because it prevents cavities, that you can market that way. But if the bigger motivator is the perspective of, oh, they actually like the packaging and the size of the piece of gum, you're going to miss the mark. You're not going to end up getting that fifth dentist to come over and prefer Trident or sell more Trident to your customers.
Exactly. I mean, the 4 in 5 dentists is a great example, because what comes next? What's the other piece of the story? And the story seems relevant too, because that seems like stories more often than not map to that why data as well, to the heart reason behind all of this, beyond the head numbers.
Absolutely. And I when I lecture on the topic of empathy, I talk about how the story of the one is so much more powerful and motivating to get people to action than the data, the large story. And so the example of that right now, we recently passed 250,000 people have died from the coronavirus. That's a massive, massive number. And it's a number, and you can stay detached from that. You can look at it objectively. That's great. But then when you start to hear the story of the one person, and you get the story of somebody that passed away because they, caught it, it was a frontline medical worker who caught it as a result of, helping their patients say goodbye to their loved ones who were dying of COVID. And then they too fell victim to the disease and passed away. That just starts to get down into the heart. And you start to understand, oh, this is real. I need to do something more about this. And we often, I'm going to sidebar slightly, but it's all related to this. So when the pandemic started, Ignite 360, we started an ongoing series called Navigating to a New Normal. And so we're following 16, what I refer to as everyday Americans, 16 people, cross section of society, geographies, ages, income, education, et cetera. And we also have quant data. But on the qualitative side, with our 16 people, we noticed the folks that live in the cities tend to be more, at this point, aware and sensitive to the impact of COVID and what it's doing. And so how they're behaving, where some of the folks that are in more rural locations are like, it's not really affecting me, whatever. I don't believe in all of this, masks, blah, blah, blah. And so the conversation the moderators and I had recently, and we're going to explore this in some upcoming interviews, is this idea that you really do need to have something affect you on a more personal level and on a closer to home level in order for you to be motivated to do something about it. So when I get back to the story of 250,000 people have died from coronavirus, and then here's the story of this one person. It's the one person, it makes it personal, it makes it human. And so you marry those two things up and it creates conviction. And so in the workplace, what does this mean? So in the workplace, if you've got that piece of data and then you've got the story that goes with it, that one individual story, and you go into your boss or your boss's boss, or you're in the C-suite, and you're having to present to the board of directors to ask them for $50 million of CapEx to do this new product, you've got a lot more conviction because you have the story of the one person that's also driving you. That and the data fuel together, and you can see it in people's eyes. They can walk in with a lot more confidence and courage to make the ask, present the case, do what they've got to do in order to get to the outcome that they're looking for.
So I'm glad that you sidebarred into all of that, because I think what we're talking about gets to, I don't know what to call what we're in right now. I was going to say the brand of COVID-19, but the messaging around it, I am perplexed by as to what people need to be able to understand this. We're recording this here in late November. It's airing in mid-December, but things are surging once again. What is it in the message that is not adding up to people, or is it as simple as what you just said of having some of those rural outlying areas where maybe they don't know enough people impacted, so it seems like, or has seemed like, less of a thing?
Yes. I think there's a lot of different factors that are going into it. And we've had over 450 hours of interviews now with our folks. We started in early April, and we've talked about this and explored a little more about their attitudes towards it, what's been driving that. And so there's a few things that are going on. One, there is a lack of empathy coming from the federal government, and an expression of empathy for what people are going through. And that does signal to, you know, that message is heard by a lot of people, and a lot of people listen to that. So you've got one very influential sector or section that's not really expressing empathy with what people are going through. So that's creating one issue, and it's telling people like, oh, it's actually not that bad, whatever. And there is the desire, people are worried about their livelihoods. You know, the economy is critical, and you know, it's my personal economy that I'm worried about, and I don't want to see that suffer. And it can be hard for people if they're not hearing the stories of how people are affected, then their story of how it's affecting them can override that. I think also the media you know, which has done overall, I think, a great job of covering the case. And but when the outbreaks were so concentrated in New York City back in the spring, when this was first getting going, and Chicago, and, you know, out here on the West Coast, Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco, like that's what we were hearing about. And it's really hard to, again, have empathy. If I'm living in rural South Carolina, it's harder for me to connect to and understand why. Well, yeah, of course, in New York City, everybody's living on top of each other. And that, of course, that could be a problem. And I can see how that's going to spread. I've got lots of wide open space here on my farm in South Carolina. So why should I care about this? You know, I'm just going to go about and live my life. So I think the media could have, and it's hard to criticize at this point, but because you do what you do and what you can do, but I think there could have been more balanced reporting of what's happening in the heartland, what's happening in rural communities, as well as the major cities, and then, you know, continuing to reinforce why that's important. But again, the empathy from the media, I mean, they were covering the patients, the individual stories of the people that died. So you're getting that there, but if you're not seeing it in your local community, and if your local community leaders aren't talking about it or concerned about it, then, you know, why should I care about this? Additionally, it was disproportionately affecting, and still is disproportionately affecting, lower income and people of color, and Blacks, Hispanics, and other populations. And again, if you're a white individual, you're not going to necessarily see that and connect with that as easily as if it was a friend, a family member, a colleague, a neighbor.
You know, that's when you lay it out like that, it's not hard to see how we've ended up where we are. So hopefully some of those dots can get better connected. Now, this could seem somewhat congruous, but it is the order of events here in the podcast. But after all of that, and probably thankfully so, it is time for us to chat about a brand that has made you smile recently.
Okay, one brand that has made me smile. And actually, I don't think that it's incongruous, because it is still so important for us to smile and remember the things that we're grateful for, remember and appreciate the things that we have. And we're actually seeing data that's showing that people, gratitude, we're starting to see that as, and I believe that is the next macro trend that we're gonna start to see shaping our society, moving away from authenticity or building on top of authenticity and going into a state of gratitude. About 72% of folks are saying that they want gratitude in the coming, when this is all over. Only about 18% want to go back to exactly the way things were before. And when we dig into what that they're looking for, the top answer, 75%, say they want to learn to appreciate the things that they have. And they want to spend more time with their family, with their friends. They want to do more things on self-care. And smiling is part of self-care. So a brand that's made me smile recently is Peloton. I just got a Peloton bike after a 2-month wait. I got one 2 weeks ago and have been very diligently working out and exploring. And the sort of simplicity of it, I think, is really smart. And it made me start to explore the brand and, like, how long has this been around? And, oh my God, it's been around for 8 years. Where have I been? Because I really only started to turn onto it a couple of years ago. And finding the different instructors and you know, I've been exploring different workouts. So which instructors do I like? But the thing that I've noticed about all of them is the positive attitude that they convey. There's no shaming or judgment that's coming through. So it's a very empathetic coaching training approach, where it's all positive encouragement. There's nothing about, hey, you can slim down for swimsuit season, or work off those holiday meals in advance. You know, it's none of that. It's all very positive. You can do this. We've got this. Here's what we're going to do next, and think about it. And, you know, great upbeat music, upbeat instructors, really amazing delivery. Like, they came with the bike pretty much installed. They were in my garage for 5 minutes, putting it where I needed it, placed, plugging it in, and I was good to go.
That's a great story. And again, very, very on brand too for the, I love what you said, the macro trend of gratitude. I think that is something that we all hopefully are aspiring to. Rob, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Two different places. The first stop would be the Ignite 360 website, which is ignite-360.com. I would all encourage, once you're there, go check out the Sparks section, which is our blog, our thought pieces. Lots of pieces around navigating to a new normal. We just did a video asking folks about how we can come back together as a country and re-achieve unity. Really fascinating. That's on there as well. That's all ignite-360.com Sparks. And then I would ask people to find me on LinkedIn. Rob Volpe, you can look up Empathy Activist along with that search, and you will go straight to me.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Rob, thanks for being on brand with us.
Fantastic conversation, Nick. Thank you very much.
And if you liked what you're hearing, remember, if we've made you smile, please subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.